Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Joe Sheehan.
I don't know if you read what Joe Sheehan wrote.
I did.
Baseball America, SI, and the Joe Sheehan Newsletter.
Into right center, back of the warning track, the wall, it is gone!
He writes what Dan reads.
Reading is good.
Joe Sheehan with Bernstein and McKnight on the Score.
The top of the hour is brought to you by the Chicago Wolves. Your Western Conference champion Chicago Wolves will open the season Saturday, October 5th. For group and season tickets, visit ChicagoWolves.com. Joe Sheehan is on Twitter at Joe_Sheehan. Sports Illustrated, Baseball America, and the indispensable Joe Sheehan subscription newsletter. He joins us in the Alpamonte Ford Hotline. Alpamonte Ford, over 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. What's happening, Joe? How are you?
Buried in spreadsheets, Dan. I finished up the third thirds, and behind the scenes at the newsletter, there's a lot of tracking that has to be done, subscribers and such. The bigger we get, the more there is. So I hope there were no big stories in baseball in the last 24 hours.
No, but it's good news. I'm glad to hear, for those of us who like the newsletter, that it sounds like with all that work, it must be very healthy right now.
It is good. It just feels like college again when you would let all the work, well, I would let all the work last until, you know, December 8th and then be like, oh, I have to do a semester's worth of work in 4 days.
Yeah, that's right about how I did it. I stopped drinking for about 12 hours to get all that work done and then got right back into it, though. So I don't know if that's your prescription, too.
I start drinking.
Yeah, well, there you go. So I'm looking at, we were talking about this earlier. Obviously, there's some Joe Maddon news and some comments to get to here. But as for the Cubs and their bullpen, they have two pitchers in the bullpen who were on the roster opening day. That's Pedro Strop and, oh gosh, Tyler Chatwood, who was technically in the bullpen and kind of a swing guy.
Cishek was there too, right?
Cishek was, but he's on the injured list right now, so that's another guy down. Where does that rank in terms of managing through a season? And I mean that from Joe's perspective for you.
Anytime a manager has to dig that deep into, you know, when you're starting to talk about using 25, 30 pitchers and you're a contender, obviously bad teams will do this all the time. Not counting position players, I've got them at 28 pitchers, 27. Wow, they've used a lot of position players.
Yep.
27 pitchers used. That's really hard for a contender. Not even so much that you want to lock guys into roles, but when you're talking about using the 16th, 17th relievers on your depth chart, where you're talking about in-season bringing in guys and trying to figure out what they have and what their roles are going to be, that's a challenge. And, you know, I focused a lot of attention on what Aaron Boone has done this year, managing through all of those injuries and getting performances out of guys like Urshela and Maben. I think about Dave Roberts a couple of years ago when his starting rotation was pretty much down to Kenta Maeda and four guys out of Albuquerque. I would put Maddon's work with the bullpen this year. And again, I've criticized the way the bullpen's built and what he's done, but I think you have to give him a bit of a pass because he doesn't have the seven guys he left camp with in April.
Nicholas Castellanos is slashing in his 49 Cubs plate appearances at a clip of .370, .408, .761. I heard Len Casper on these airwaves earlier. He was digging into some StatCast data, Joe, and he noted that Castellanos was only batting .700 on barrels. You should bat around .800 on barrels, and a lot of that was attributable to Comerica Park. So his complaints were well-merited. He is barreling the ball, and now all of a sudden we are seeing the power. Is that sort of a facile way of looking at it, or getting him out of that park, it hasn't made that much of a difference?
Well, Len's not that bright, so I wouldn't expect that much. No. In the sample of barrels, which for a full-time player, like I'm going to guess, is probably like for Castellanos so far this year, probably maybe 50 or 60. That's a pretty small sample. So the difference between hitting 700 and 800 really isn't much. You can blame it on the park. You just blame it on, you know, the balls, finding the right guys and being positioned well. But I do think we're seeing Castellanos is somebody who gets the bat to the ball, hits it hard. The problem with him has generally been a lack of home run power. And that's just not the guy, that type of hitter he is. And, of course, the defense, which is better this year than it's been in past years. Is he a true talent .370 hitter? No, but I think if you look at his peak seasons in Detroit, which were generally .290 to .310, a handful of walks, you know, enough walks to be like an Adam Jones type guy, maybe a little more than that. And then, you know, real doubles power with, you know, 20 to 25 homers. Is he a true, no, nobody's a true talent .370 hitter. But, I mean, Castellanos was a really good pickup. He was the perfect trade downline pickup in that he upgraded the offense. He didn't cost a whole lot because he's a rental. And you had a spot for him. It squeezed a few guys on playing time, including, you know, the sainted Albert Almora. But it's really – I loved the Cubs' deadline. And you can love a team's deadline and have the player tank for 2 weeks and still be good moves. This is one of those cases where the move actually fits the performance after the deadline.
Joe, there is a fairly large, or at least larger than I would think it should be, Cubs fandom segment that looks at Chris Bryant and sees a lack of clutch, whatever that's worth. They see a guy that's not going to be here in 2 years. They could be right on that. And they see a guy that they'd rather move on for assets they can control. It is amazing to me. It is crazy to me. And I wonder if this season will do enough to dispel some of those opinions about one of the best guys playing third in baseball.
I think there are a couple of separate conversations that we're having there.
Mm-hmm.
One is Bryant clutch, and that's silly. I had somebody came at me about this on Twitter the other day, and I looked it up, and win probability added over leverage index, essentially it's a measure of clutch performance. It's a nerdy way of doing it. Tom Tango, who's with MLB now, came up with it. And Bryant was, I believe, sixth in the National League. So if we want to argue that he didn't get a hit with second and third and two outs 2 weeks ago, that's fine. But when you actually look at the collection of his performance this year, he's certainly not unclutch. We can debate the merits of WPALI, which is a horribly named statistic, but we're stuck with it. But there's no evidence this year that Chris Bryant isn't clutch. I think it's a separate conversation as to whether you want to lock him up for the rest of his career. If you look at it, he's not a free agent until after 2021. His 2022 season, he'll be, I can do math, 30 years old.
Yes.
So if you're talking about extending him, you're buying into that period of time, that period of a career, where we know now that you want to run away from guys. It feels like, and my theory is that it's because of the velocity in the game and how hard, much harder pitchers throw. But, I mean, older players, particularly, you know, guys 35 and beyond, are basically being pushed out of the game. There are occasional exceptions like Nelson Cruz. But last year, there were, I believe it was 15 players, 32 and older, who had three win seasons. 15 players across the entire league, 32 and older. And you're basically buying in, because you're not going to get Bryant. You're not going to be able to sign Bryant for 3 years and $65 million. You're going to have to give him a full-fledged second extension, a big deal. I don't know if I want to buy into any player short of Mike Trout for his 30s. So the fact that Bryant didn't reach the majors until he was 33, the fact that the Cubs held him back that extra week to buy the extra year, I don't know that I want to extend him. And then if you don't necessarily want to give him that 6-7 year deal, I think that it does become a question of keeping him versus trading him. Me, I think this is the Cubs' window. I think if they keep trying to win in 2021 and it falls apart a little bit in 22, you've had an 8 year run with this particular core. But to me, extending Bryant, I don't know that I would really want any part of that.
Sure. Okay. So then what is, I get you there. Anybody over 30 is don't trust him, right? That's the old Woodstock thing.
Yeah.
But like, There is a different conversation of what is the next 2 years of Bryant worth to you if you're the Cubs versus, I don't know, someone else who's trying to win. You know, can you find in trade, I guess, is this segment of Cubs fan asking, can you find in trade the value of Chris Bryant's next two seasons?
Boy, that's interesting because we just don't see a whole lot of trades like this anymore, right?
Nope.
Most trades are future for present. You know, or selling off a contract or something like that. We don't usually see a, hey, let's make a baseball for baseball trade. I think Bryant, if you're saying what do the Cubs need more than anything else, is probably a true number one starter.
Sure. And he needs to be 26 or younger and on a whole bunch of years of control.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's got to be, he's got to be Gerrit Cole 3 years ago.
Yeah.
Cole's a free agent this year. You sign Gerrit Cole, you keep Chris Bryant. That's the argument I would make. But yeah, that's what you're looking for out there. And I'm just kind of flipping through the mental Rolodex here. You know, I don't know if I'd want Jacob DeGrom because he's on that big contract now. You're not going to get Scherzer, and Scherzer's 36. But I mean, with pitchers, the aging curve doesn't matter as much. Some of them break the curve anyway. But that's what you're talking about here. You're talking about a starting pitcher equivalent to Bryant, who's going to be about as expensive, going to be about as controlled 2 to 3 years. That's what you're looking to make, a baseball trade. One for one. Walker Buehler is outside that range. I don't think you can get Buehler for Bryant. You know, Jack Flaherty, who was, I believe, in the recent run that he's had. I mean, that's kind of what you're talking about. Somebody who could maybe even grow into being a number one. I think it's a fascinating time. I'm kind of thinking through it here, guys. I know it's bad radio, but It's a fascinating idea, trading Chris Bryant at essentially his peak.
Did you think that the Cleveland Indians had this in them?
I never stopped picking them for the division, which is more me being stubborn than anything else. But I'm, you know, when they were 11.5 back, and not just that, but they looked terrible. They had 7 good players, only 2 of which were playing well. You know, Ramirez was terrible for 2 months. You know, Lindor was hurt and he came back. He played well. All of the starters were on the DL except Bieber. I got to say, I wasn't really seeing this coming. And the performance they got out of Zach Plesac, Shane Bieber, and Adam Plutko, at a point where it looked like their season was going to fall apart, kind of saved them a little bit. Terry Francona, guys, that's not the famous bullpen they had a couple of years ago. It's 7 guys named Nick Goody. And, you know, they got Oliver Perez, who's 64, 65 years old or something. He's coming out of the bullpen for them. Francona has just done an amazing job putting together that bullpen. The offense wasn't good. They were using their backup starters, and it's the best bullpen in the American League. And that kind of bought them time for Clevinger to come back, for Ramirez to hit, for them to make these trades for Puig and Reyes. So, no, Dan, I would love to tell you that I did. I really had my doubts about the Indians' ability to win this division. Now I think they've almost got to be the favorite just because they're in a better health situation than the Twins are.
What's the other percentage then? If it's 70% or whatever, the Indians grabbing it, what percentage would you say the Twins kind of gave this away?
I don't know. I mean, they're from the day it was, I didn't think that they were 31-29 from the day they had an 11.5 game lead to Sunday. I don't really think you can blame a team for, you know, I don't really think they blow it if they play 505 ball for 60 yeah. games. This is really about the Indians playing 700 ball. You know, the Twins, Byron Buxton is their guy, man. They've got this massive split without him. They're above 700 when he starts, and they're under 500 when he doesn't start. And it's one of the problems in having a very fragile player as your best player, as your superstar.
Something I've been thinking about, too, every week it seems like we're learning the name of another 19 or 20-year-old, a rookie. Now it's Aristides Aquino.
Connor, he's still talking about baseball, right?
Who comes up? Somebody comes up against your team, like, who is this guy? Or whether, you know, Houston every week seems to have another kid who's amazing. And we just did it last year with Acuna and Albies. What is this going to reach a point where teams really begin over-promoting, where they end up like, oh, now it's our turn. Now this is just what you do. And now a guy who we've drafted who we think is great, who is destroying A-ball, we can just bring him up to the majors. At some point, there's going to be enough mistakes that people are going to reel it in a little bit, aren't they? I mean, and this is kind of in the context of Luis Robert, of when a team's like, well, this is the new thing, and if a guy's great and he's 18 or 19, you just bring him up to the majors. Is this going to keep happening?
Yeah, because those mistakes don't cost you anything. You can make a mistake in free agency that costs you $17 million a year, or you can make a mistake calling up a kid that costs you $8.75 an hour. It's much cheaper to make these mistakes. So I think we will continue to see these players come to the majors. And I don't know how many of them. I mean, some players are going to wash out in the major leagues. That's just the nature of the game. But because players are more prepared than ever to play in the majors at a young age, because the pipeline is just that good now. The way we develop players is just that good now. And that's the international amateurs, that's U.S. amateurs. Players are more prepared to be professional baseball players when they get signed than any other point before. So therefore, and then teams are better once they get them in the organization to make them into better players. So we are going to see players reach the majors and be ready at these incredibly young ages. I don't see this change. Now, there's a floor. You're not going to see 14-year-olds striking out 12. Against the Tigers, maybe. But you're generally not going to see, you know, the guys that young play. But you're going to see this 19, 20, 21, 22. This is where the game is now. And it's one of the reasons, you know, I've been on the, not to change the subject, but I've been on the pedal hard for the MLBPA to say, hey, we've got to have a much higher minimum salary because this is where all of the value is being created.
Absolutely, 1,000% with you there. I wonder, though, if the idea that the development curve has completely changed with these 19 and 20-year-olds, though, does that blow out of the water the old adage that we brought the kid up too quickly and it torched his development, the old, the old Gordon Beckham thing?
I don't think you can screw up a kid by bringing him up too early if you make that decision quickly. Where I think you can screw up a kid is the Willie Green way, where you bring him up and you send him down, and you bring him up and you send him down. The Pirates have done this year with Mitch Keller. The Pirates brought up Mitch Keller not because they thought Mitch Keller was ready, but because they needed somebody to start on a Tuesday, or it was a Monday night in Cincinnati. And he got rocked, and they sent him down. And they called him up because they needed somebody to start on a Thursday afternoon in Pittsburgh, and then they sent him down. I think it's the up and down that can really mess up a guy. I think you can also mess up a guy by leaving him in the minors too long. I think you make the argument, I can make the argument that the Blue Jays did that with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. He was ready to be in the major leagues a year ago, and they waited until this, you know, almost May to bring him up. But he was hurt in the spring. So those are the ways you can screw guys up. But I don't think pushing a guy to the highest level and seeing him fail there is necessarily a problem as long as you handle that failure as an organization properly.
People may not know this because it's not often discussed, but Hyunjin Ryu of the Dodgers has a 1.45 ERA. He's allowed zero or one earned run in 15 of his last 17 outings. Now, I didn't know this until I read this today, that right now the lowest ERA by any qualified starter since 1969, that was the year of the lowering of the mound, belongs
1.53.
To... 1.53. 1.53 by Dwight Gooden of the 1985 Mets. What are we seeing here? What's the significance of what Ryu is doing?
I was a 14-year-old Yankee fan in New York. You think I don't remember 1985? I could.
Well, that was the year that I was watching Carlton Fisk hit 37 home runs for the White Sox and Bob James saving over 30 games.
You know, Ryu is doing it in a way that we're just not, I mean, he's not somebody who's overpowering. We're used to guys coming up and everybody throws 97 with ridiculous breaking stuff. And, you know, Ryu has a fairly normal fastball for a left-hander. He's got this incredible command. He's got a great change. It's just all working for him this year. If you watch him pitch, guys, it's surgical. You know, Dwight Gooden mentioned in 53, you know who has the lowest ERA since then?
The lowest ERA.
You have to get this in Chicago. You just have to.
It's not Arrieta.
Maddox. Maddox in 94, 95, one of those 2 years that he was amazing. He had an ERA about 1.6.
So Pedro didn't have it.
Pedro 99, no. Yeah.
Because remember, Pedro 99, 2000. It looks great in ERA plus in the adjusted numbers, but it was 99 in 2000. The actual ERA, I think, was 1.7. Mm. But yeah, you look at and Ryu is closer to Maddox in terms of this is a command and a four-pitch guy in location. He's not as overwhelming as Pedro is. And it's really fun to watch. And I'll be honest with you, he had a bad outing in Colorado. We were building two. And I kind of lost track of his numbers. And to look back, basically since that outing, he's gone back to not allowing any runs. It's basically he's had one bad start in a year. It's really something to watch. I knew, you know, the best pitcher in baseball would be a left-handed starter for the Dodgers. I just had the wrong one. So, no, it's a fantastic story. It's just another reason, you know, that Dodger team, and again, it's the West Coast. They play most of their games at 10 o'clock at night. They've been on our radar for 3 or 4 years now, so we kind of lose track of them a little bit, like we almost take them for granted. But Ryu is having not just a great year, but it's a great year that guys like us aren't talking about enough.
So, Joe, since you finished the thirds, as we let you go and the Cubs play the Phillies, who we haven't seen in a little while, or if you've been just watching Cubs baseball, a little snapshot, if you would, a 60-second snapshot on what you see from the Philadelphia Phillies.
They've been wrecked by injuries. You talk about bullpens being wiped out. Hector Neris, I think, is the only healthy reliever, maybe him and Adam Morgan from the start of the year. They've also had injuries to McCutcheon, to Jay Bruce. Otabel Herrera, who's supposed to be their center fielder, has been suspended for an incident in Atlantic City with his girlfriend. It's just been one of those years where everything's gone wrong. You know, Bryce Harper has had, I wouldn't call it a bad year. It's going to end up being a 2-3 win year, but it's not the MVP caliber year that I thought he would have at 26 and kind of raise up the Phillies. Arrieta has been hurt. He's been pitching through a bum elbow that, frankly, guys, I think we're going to find out after the year that Arrieta should have been shut down in May, mm-hmm. and he's been pitching through this. And I don't mean that in a Phillies are wrong sense. I mean that the Arrieta has tried to pitch through this sense. But he's like a 70-pitch starter at this point. He really sunsets middle of the game. He's trying to gut his way through it because he knows that this team doesn't have the pitching depth to get by. So it's been a tough year for the Phillies. They were pretty quiet at the deadline. They went out and got Corey Dickerson. But they weren't in position to go out and make a lot of big moves. They're also, their farm system is starting to thin out a little bit. They got a third baseman, Alec Baum. You'll see him next year. Just a rough year. They invested a lot in this season. But here's the thing. They invested a lot in not just this season. Like, they didn't go all in for 2019. They went all in for 19, 20, 21. So the fact that they're going to win 78 games this year amidst a million injuries doesn't necessarily mean they blew it. I think they'll bounce back in 2020 with better health, with, you know, Baum possibly coming up, maybe trading off, kind of aligning the talent a little bit better. But right now, they're, you know, a 500-ish team with a lot of injuries.
Sounds like a good reason to fire the hitting coach and replace him with Charlie Manuel.
Wow. Kapler's got to love that, right?
Yeah, that's you. Well, usually that's the deflector shield being shot right. off before the spaceship is destroyed, right?
We're not nerds.
No, anything but. Joe, thank you.
Thanks, fellas.
That is Joe Sheehan, and I've got a baseball question for you, and I want to see if you know. There are four respective, in this year of the home run and the juiced ball, there are four franchise home run records that are on pace to fall.
Oh, teams who are out-homering their franchise records?
No, individual.
Four
teams, single season, all-time home run record is on pace to fall at this moment. And can you name any of the four teams?
Good trivia question. You going to give me the break to get to you?
Okay.
I think you should give me the break to get to you because I have a report from Bears practice that involved a fight.
A fight?
That's right.
All right, we'll get to that. But there are four teams, individual single-season home run records in danger of falling right now on pace to fall. See if you can think of what they are.
It's Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The bottom of the hour is brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join Coach Fitz and the Big Ten West Division champions at Ryan Field this fall when they host Ohio State, Michigan State, Iowa, and more. Season and single game tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. So who's fighting whom?
Well, there's a fight at Bears camp. The first
fight.
My guess is Ted Larson against somebody.
I'm really glad we didn't put the show pot on Ted Larson fighting someone for the first fight in practice because it wasn't.
You're kidding me.
I'm floored.
I would have pushed all in that it was Ted Larson and something or something inanimate or a person.
I am absolutely floored. Ted Larson was not punching himself in the head, which does not qualify as a fight anyway, but it's not. According to none other than the Twitter feed of one Arthur Arkish, first camp fight today between Prince Amukamara and Javon Wims.
Wow, that would have taken me a while.
Prince said it happened. Guys are competitive. You never know if one guy's going harder than the other. He also said he and Javon are all good. And it could be a positive for the team. Mitch was asked about the fight. He said it is what it is. Brothers fight. I think you can see the maturity we have because how few fights there have been in camp, and it brushed over quickly because the Bears have bigger goals. Now, I caught Prince. Prince did the sideline interview on the Bears' first preseason game, somewhere in the third or something like that. And I know he's got a reputation of being an immensely nice guy. We had Javon Wims on the show shortly after he was drafted.
Yeah, he was good.
Seemed like a very nice and smart dude. So it looks like this was, or at least it's being presented as though this was a fight that guys just kind of get over. You know, you get your blood up, fight a little bit, you punch it out some.
It's a protocol fight.
Yeah.
Sometimes, I remember Jim Flanagan years ago explaining it to me when there was a series of fights and there was a bunch of stuff going on. It was like Alonzo Spellman and Andy Heck. And Jim Flanagan got into one. And he was explaining. He said, there's a protocol to these things. If he goes a certain amount of time after the whistle or if I had done something, he said, and then you do it and then you finish it up and then you hug it out, bitches, and you're fine.
Saw him the other day, actually, Jeremy Piven, just wandering around downtown. Is it weird? Is there a bias that I have that the farther away from the football the fight happens, the less I worry about it? Like in terms of it spilling over or having real bad blood or anything like that?
I think that's just
you. Think that's my
you.
Own personal bias? I'm fine with that. I'm happy to dispel that bias. I can toss that.
The problem that I have often is if there is a size disparity. That's when I start to worry.
Oh, a mismatch.
I don't like a physical mismatch because that's where you could easily get an injury even if you're going about things the right way. And I think it's why the Bears were really pissed. Remember Martellus Bennett got suspended when he threw Kyle Fuller down.
Dumped him.
Yeah, he dumped him. And that was a situation where that could have been bad, We don't do stuff like that. If you're going to slap each other in the helmet, or if you're going to kind of sumo wrestle around and dance a little bit, that's different than picking up a defensive back and throwing him on the ground.
You don't want to do that. Right. I don't want the helmet slapping either. And listen, if this sounds soft, so be it. It's the preseason, and this is the time
you're
for
like
softness.
One of those sissies from the 1940s.
I really am. I don't want guys slapping helmets either, because you break hands that way.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't want to break fingers and stuff like that. The pushing and the shoving and the plotzing and the that's all fine. I don't care about that. If you got to get it out, get it out. Don't slap a guy in the helmet. Those things are like are designed to break the little small bones in your hand.
Although the small bone issue that is newsworthy today, it was Jim Irsay mentioning a bone injury to Andrew Luck when they had said it was a calf muscle, and then Jim Irsay was all fired up, and he's like, yeah, it's a small bone. We think he'll be fine.
Old Jim,
what's up, man?
Less than fired up about
everybody
that
said,
one.
Everybody said, what?
Yeah, that's the small bone issue, but the helmet issue that's got everyone fired. And I told you at the very beginning of the show, I wanted nothing to do with Antonio Brown's search.
That's why I hadn't brought it up.
A new helmet?
Yeah, he has a helmet within specifications, but it's an old helmet that nobody has, and he's right. Sort of put it out there, help me out. And give me my helmet.
Yeah, and it's noise from Antonio Brown that no one really cares about, or at least I don't, until, and I didn't see this coming. Sage Rosenfels, our guy, tweeted a video.
Yeah.
His old Giants helmet is the same helmet Antonio Brown is looking for.
Why did he keep his old Giants
helmet?
Is
the same size.
I didn't think you're allowed to keep a helmet.
And falls within the range. He's Sage Rosenfels. He's probably just kleptoed it out.
It was in his car.
Just walked it away. Yeah. I mean, so apparently Sage has Antonio Brown's helmet. So the first time we have Sage on, we're going to have to ask him if he shipped the helmet to AB and if he got it the paint job.
All right, single season franchise home run records in danger of falling. How many can you name this year in MLB? I've got four.
So the easy one.
One, two, three, four.
The easy one is Brewers, right? Christian Yelich is coming up on whatever the Brewers all-time leader is, Norman Thomas
you
or
should
something?
No, Yelich has 39.
Yeah.
He is on pace for 53. Their record is 50. It was set by someone whose father also had a 50 home run season.
Prince Fielder
had his father had, I think, 51 for the Tigers many years ago. But yes, Prince Fielder has the record at 50. Yelich at 39 on pace for 53. That's one.
Okay, so my next two are going to be slightly cop outs.
Actually, you know what? Hold on a second. I lied. I have five here.
Oh, five in total. Okay. So
1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Thank you. I've added one. You get a late bonus.
Now this list has sports papal infallibility. Your Twins have to have somebody coming up on it?
No.
Really?
Really?
They've just hit so many home runs.
And the Twins franchise record has got to be Killebrew,
I believe
right?
It is Killebrew. Unless it's Herbeck. No, it's Killebrew. My brother goes to a ton of the Twins games, so I think that's right.
So
not Twins.
We have one all-time great, we have a rookie, and we have a former Cub.
Okay. Well, that's got to be... Okay, so I am right. I know that the Royals...
Correct.
...have a...
Jorge Soler.
Yeah, Georgie is got to be closing in on it, because the Royals' total is really low. I don't think anybody has even had like a 40-something homer season.
You're right. Mike Moustakas with 38
in
2017. And I think the previous record was like Steve Balboni.
Yeah.
And Jorge Soler's at 35.
Yeah.
So he's gonna blast through that.
I know a couple of guys who used to work in KC, so that's why. Ronald Acuna, I was just reading a story about him. He's going to have a 30-30, if not a 40-40 season, but I don't know
Different
if that's
record.
Coming close up there. No?
No, Hank Aaron was never a prolific single season.
But he did have a 50-50.
No.
No, you're right. He never
hit
50.
Never hit 50.
But he did hit a 47,
I think so.
For the Braves. So he'd be a little bit off that pace with only 6 weeks of the season left to go. Those were my guesses. I'm really surprised that the Twins don't have a record closing in on falling. But the Yelich one makes a lot of sense.
Pete Alonso with 38 home runs
on
pace for 52 is chasing the Mets record of 41, shared by Todd Hundley in 1996.
Did Jason Bay?
Carlos Beltran in 2006 also hit 41.
Brendan McCaffrey that would be upset at me.
That leaves us with the Dodgers' current record is 49. Can you name, I would have been here a long time, in the long and storied history of the Dodgers, who do you think holds their single-season home run record?
At 49?
At 49, set in 2001.
It's Adrian Beltre.
It's Sean Green.
I thought it was Adrian Beltre.
It's Sean Green. And that would be second in most home runs in a season hit by a Jew.
Is that right?
Hank Greenberg had 56 right. one
yeah,
year,
did.
Right?
Of course he did.
I'm sure there might be somebody else on that list. Cody Bellinger is at 38 on pace for 51. So he's ready to set that.
Yeah, it's getting close.
And this, it was only probably a matter of time before he... Can you name the Angels' single-season home run record holder with 47?
Is it the fish? Is it salmon?
It's Troy Glaus.
Troy Glaus. I always get that wrong.
Troy Glaus.
I always say it's salmon when it's actually Glaus. I got to get these Sporkle quizzes right.
Glaus with 47. Mike Trout at 39 is on pace for 53.
Yeah, of course he is. Will that finally elevate Trout to the level? Listen.
People realize he's the best baseball player ever won.
He's got to get a damn 50 home run season before anybody goes, oh, this Trout fella, he's actually pretty good. I wish it was. Don't you wish it was Tim Salmon, who had the all-time...
So Trout could surpass Salmon?
Of course.
No.
All right.
No, I don't.
Well, I threw it out there for you. You're going fishing in, like, literally 9 hours.
Yes.
So I thought I'd give it to you.
And with the opportunity to catch my first ever lake trout. I've never caught one.
Will you have salmon on the line, or is that not... We're not in salmon territory?
No, although... Now, the fish nerdery alert. A lake trout is more salmon than it is trout.
Is it pink?
The flesh is orangish pink, yeah, depending on where it comes
white.
From. Cooks up, yeah. Oh. But it is a salmonid. It is not as closely related to the actual rainbow trout, brook trout, cutthroat, river trout. It is a member of the salmon family referred to as a trout.
Well, I know we got Lawrence Holmes coming up in transition. We got to say our thank yous to. But real quick, before we get out of here, we'll do this in a minute or two. But I got to ask you a couple of questions about this trip, including what are those?
Your boots, man.
Oh, God.
This segment sponsored by Hint Water. Hint is pure still or sparkling water infused with a variety of fruit essences, including watermelon, blackberry, and cherry. No sugar, no sweeteners, no calories. Available in your local grocery store or at drinkhint.com. Hint, mouthwatering water. Connor's about to make fun of me next on The Score.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Lawrence Holmes is coming up in just a bit, and make sure that you have tickets for the final installment of the Budweiser Brickhouse Tavern's 2019 Cubs on Deck Luncheon Series. Lawrence will host Nicholas Castellanos, who we know is really interesting, and reliever Derek Holland, who's also
a crazy person.
Really interesting.
And completely enjoyable.
It is Tuesday, August 20th. Tickets are on sale at 670score.com/on deck, presented by TimberTech and Xfinity. Also, Joe Madden will be with Lawrence tomorrow instead of today. Lots to discuss with him at this time tomorrow.
All those things are correct. Hub Arkish is going to be with me for the next 2 days. Joe O is in on Friday. Dan is on vacation. And I bring this up, one, to wish you a happy vacation.
Thank you.
May you catch many fish, stay safe, all that kind of stuff. Two, if people are going to miss you while you're gone, you should watch Leftovers this afternoon. It'll just be a little video that you can keep with you for the next week or so while Dan's gone, and you can watch it over and over. you will see on Leftover that Dan is wearing the worst shoes in the history of shoes. You look ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
The great thing about the North Woods is that you don't care how you look, and these I found to be the best option for waterproof boots in which to fish. And today I'm breaking them in.
You got all function and no form, my man. That is, you got your shoes.
Yep.
My favorite part, these are going to be the subject of Leftovers. My favorite part is your sock choice with the shoe. Although I will say,
well, the socks are going to be different up there. Those are like the heavy duty
wool. Oh, you're going to need like a Gore-Tex sock or something like that. You got to put those in. I appreciate that you just don't give a damn and you're going to wear those shoes. That's impressive.
Don't have to care. I looked at a bunch and I had to get my old ones are falling apart and I got these and I'm cool with it. I like it. I'm all good. Thanks to Kevin Fishbane and Joe Sheehan for joining us today. Zawoski, Camp, Sean Anderson, Brian Gertz, Ray Diaz helped out. Kevbo had the updates. Mike Florio is going to be with you tomorrow. Yeah, I'm going to be gone essentially
a week.
A week, because I get back so late Monday night that I won't be able to.
Bam! Just like that. That's all there is to it. A winner.
I mentioned this before. I could get eaten by a bear.
You could.
And or wolves.
Just remember, you only have to outrun the other guy.
You promise?
When it's a bear.
this is really my concern, because up this far north, there are wolves.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's wolves where I was last weekend.
Are there wharves?
I don't know. Ranji gave us the wharves yesterday. A self-reference. Yes. I don't know. I could get trampled by a moose. I could get carried away by eagles.
You could do all five. You could do all five of those things. Yep. You get real lucky. Dan's out of vacation, but not before we do Transition with Lawrence. That's next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.